What is up, good citizens of Crypt Nation? I hope you are having a spectacular morning, noon, or night, wherever you are in the world. Just know that you are in the right place, because today we've got a super-duper tremendous episode planned. But first, we want to tell you a little bit about our friends and our sponsors over at eToro.
eToro is a crypto exchange where you can buy and sell crypto with confidence. Since 2007, eToro has been helping the average consumer trade assets.
Right, yeah. Another super cool aspect of eToro is that if you're not ready to put money in the market, you can trade with up to $100,000 of virtual money while you learn. So you just come on over, you join eToro, you join us, you join their 10 million users spread across 140 countries, and start trading some crypto.
eToro is the perfect exchange for beginners or experts. Crypt Nation, not all platforms are created equal. Go to crypto101podcast.com/eToro and sign up to see the difference for yourself. Anatoly and Kevin, welcome to Crypto 101.
Hi.
Thanks, Pizza. Appreciate the invite again.
Welcome back, Kevin. Anatoly, this is your first time on Crypto 101, so I'd like you to introduce yourself and tell us, what is Parsec?
Introduce myself. It's a good question. Firstly, I'm a teacher from the teacher's dynasty that fall in love in cryptography, abstract algebra, and all the things. And when cryptocurrencies appeared, I immediately found that all my knowledge is applicable in this area, and I dive into this area. Together with my students, organized a company that eventually met Parsec Project, and we jointly created a system where we can monitor any activity in blockchain and in several blockchains, and could express any condition that we want to catch and simply notify those who are interested in these events. This is a kind of simple explanation of what we're doing.
Yeah, because there's a lot of really complicated things that are actually going on behind the scenes, but we're going to get into that in just a little bit. Let's get a quick overview, Kevin. What is CoinMetro, just in case users haven't heard your previous episode?
How could they have possibly not heard the previous episode? That's just insane.
Some of them are brand new.
That's true. We'll give it up for the brand new guys. So CoinMetro, in a nutshell, aside from being an exchange, is absolutely much more than that. It's kind of a combination of a challenger bank combined with a retail investment platform, and also combined with an exchange. So, what we do and what we're moving towards in the future is basically an all-inclusive platform that allows someone to get involved both in crypto and traditional finance with the ease that, you know, one can kind of hail an Uber. Meaning that, you know, we create a user experience that allows people to get into what can be on the back end very complex investment vehicles and complex trading strategies, but with the ease of just pressing a few buttons. So that could mean that, you know, people in unbanked worlds are able to get banked, whether that be through crypto or through, you know, fiat. And people that are looking to maybe create some kind of passive income in their lives have the ability to do that through tokenized assets and even traditional assets. And then people that definitely want to, you know, try out trading or get involved with another trader can do that as well. So it's just about creating, I guess, the gimmicky thing would be a one-stop shop for everything that has to do with finance, whether that be on-chain or off-chain, with the goal of eventually getting it all on-chain and making that experience as seamless as getting on the internet is today.
Super interesting. Awesome. So yeah. I want to go back to Parsec real quick, because I don't know if I got the clearest explanation or if I really fully understood that. So could you go back, Anatoly, and kind of tell us about your products? Are they consumer level products? Are they institutional grade products? I know on your website it says that you could use your market intelligence to predict sell-offs, identify accumulation patterns, spot whale games, and market maker activities before these things are actually affecting our portfolios. So, I mean, Parsec seems like they're parsing, if you will. I guess that's probably where you get the name Parsec, but you're parsing the blockchain. But could you just tell us a little bit more about the products in like layman's terms?
Okay, I will try. So what we actually doing, we're taking blockchain nodes from different blockchains and replaying every single transaction that is happening in those blockchains by our own software. It means that we know perfectly what happens in even inside transactions. Because, for example, Bitcoin transactions could be simple, but they could be covered by some smart contracts written in script. Or even if you send some transaction to the Ethereum, in the Ethereum, these transactions could produce a lot of asset movements. And we see all the atomical things that happens in blockchain. So if you send the transaction in the Ethereum, and it will produce five different relocations of assets. All five relocations of assets will be caught by us, and we could notify in real time what will from which addresses to which addresses these funds are moving. But this is only one piece of what we can do. We provide most accurate and real-time notifications about what is happening in blockchains. And we even created a small programming language that allow advanced users to create patterns, to create traps for the transactions that they want to monitor. And when the transactions that meets the condition is detected, user immediately is notified by the various means. So we integrated Telegram notifications, SMS notifications, email notifications, or for programmers, if some programmer will use our notification service, we could provide traditional ways how to notify automated systems. It's called webhooks, websockets, and all the means that are familiar to the programmers.
Sounds very comprehensive. So if a consumer user wants to, you know, jack into your platform, are there pre-made strategies that they could adopt, or do they have to know how to code in order to use your platform?
Not at all. Our approach here is universal. So for tech users, we allow to code the patterns themselves. And this is why we consider our system as universal, so you could express anything. But for non-tech users, we identified patterns, how they want to monitor their blockchain, their wallets, or whale games, or other things. And you simply can use one of our wizards. So you can create projects from a template, and you will never see the code itself. You always will touch the system through the simplified interface that concentrates on the exact task that you are solving.
So what's the status of all this really cool stuff that you're building? Is it actually live right now?
Yes, it's live. We chosen the Ethereum platform as the first blockchain to cover. And you can actually go to our website and register and play with our technology at the beta.parsec.io. You simply can register, can create a project, select whether you want to create a project from the template or you want to try our programming language. And there you can configure the transport. For example, attach your Telegram handle and you will be immediately notified about any transactions that you will choose to monitor.
What kind of transactions are people trying to monitor?
It is interesting that the most popular case here is monitoring of their own addresses. If they have a lot of addresses, we allow users to enumerate their addresses in simple tables and then refer to these tables. So I want to monitor all addresses in that table. And they simply enter their addresses and get notifications about their own transactions. But I want to mention that we created a technology that allows to upload millions of addresses by a single user. If, for example, this single user is not a personal user, it's a corporate user, he can upload any amount of addresses and simply refer this set of addresses as addresses of the interest, and we will monitor only those addresses for that user.
Can you use your guys' technology to effectively, and I know this is a bad word, so don't mean it in a bad connotation, but to effectively front run big guys, you could use this technology to monitor hot addresses or big wallets or whatever. And when they're moving their EOS to Binance, for instance, you know, a big dump is coming, so you could, you know, do some market sales. Is that kind of how it would work as well?
Yes. And we allow as well to label these addresses by yourself. So you could attach arbitrary information to the addresses and make decisions, make automated decisions. For example, you can label some addresses as Binance addresses, other as, for example, Bitfinex, and monitor all the transactions between them. Soon we will provide an open sets of for the addresses that you can use for the analytics. But for now, this information should be provided by the user, but soon it will be presented as a public data sets that are available for using in our product.
So that's really cool. I know there's a lot of fear in the industry when at companies like Chainalysis that are potentially tracking users on blockchain and ruining some of the privacy and anonymity that crypto affords the average consumer. But it seems like Parsec is coming at it from the exact opposite direction and helping consumers with information they need to know to make better decisions and also protect themselves. So let's dive a little bit deeper into the technology. What are some of the issues with wallet protection before Parsec, and what were the problems that you guys came in and decided to solve?
Firstly, there is a lot of problems in monitoring transactions in real time. Because with blockchains, there always was a dilemma between finality of the transactions, when you can believe that these transactions had really happened, and the speed of notifications. For example, if you want to be sure that the transaction really happened, you need to wait. You need to wait, for example, some confirmations from the blockchain. And for example, when the exchange wants to get a deposit from the user, it doesn't accept the deposit immediately. It waits for a certain amount of confirmations before believe that the deposit is really in the hands of the exchange. But if you want to react quickly, you need to analyze not the blockchain itself, but the, for example, mempool. It's a special storage that is distributed across nodes and miners where transactions are stored before they're picked by miners to be included into blocks. And for example, in the Bitcoin blockchain, it is rather simple to monitor mempool because transactions there look like normal transactions and we can could analyze them on the fly. But for example, in the Ethereum, to be able to analyze mempool, we need to predict in which order miners will include these transactions into blocks, because Ethereum itself is a stateful computation system where order of the transactions could affect the result. So we need to constantly learn how to order transactions before trying to replay them in memory, before they even include it into blocks. And this is simply one of our interesting feature, but it's rather complex and it is under the development.
So Kevin, you and Parsec are working together, is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Can you explain initially what you saw in Parsec and what really excited you? And then could you talk a little bit about how your relationship has evolved?
Sure. So my initial involvement actually came from Parsec kind of discussing use cases for exchanges. And having already known some of the guys behind the company, we simply were sitting down, I think, having lunch one day. And the topic came up of, you know, what an exchange would need in terms of, or what kind of data would be interesting for an exchange. And without even speaking about what they were planning to do in terms of what Parsec was planning to build, we had a conversation back and forth. And then that led to some additional conversations about basically what Anatoly just very eloquently described in terms of being able basically to cut through the noise. So I think a lot of, for me, I know that when I talk about blockchain, and even now when I've talked to people about Parsec, you know, whether that be from a business angle or just simply having a personal conversation with someone that's involved in crypto, one of the questions that everybody asks is, well, you know, blockchain's already transparent. So why do I need something that alerts me to transactions that I could look up, you know, through an explorer? And I think what people fail to realize is there's so many data points that get that run through a blockchain in terms of transaction data. That, you know, it's kind of like if you could hear the conversations of everybody in the world and you had the ability just to hear them constantly all the time. Obviously, at some point, you'd be getting so much data, you wouldn't be able to process it. So there's just no way for you to take that data and use it in any meaningful way. So one of the things Parsec does is basically allows you to filter the noise so you can focus on specific triggers or specific data points that you want to monitor. And you mentioned a few of those already, guys, which is, you know, being able to see what happens with bigger wallets, being able to see when transactions happen, basically before they happen, being able to predict things. And this type of, let's say, access has always been available in traditional markets, but it hasn't been available to everyone. So when you're a guy that works at, you know, you have access to a Bloomberg terminal and you have access to news feeds that can cost 15, 20, 30K a month, you can get news. You can literally get the news before everybody else, and it allows you to trade like a professional. Professionals aren't necessarily better at trading than non-professionals. They simply have access to better toys. And what blockchain does partially, and what Parsec kind of finishes, is the fact that now everyone has access to the same data. They can learn to crunch that data through an easy to use system, and it gives them, so no one has an upper hand. So people think that, you know, crypto in general just kind of, I don't know, disintermediates and decentralizes and gets everybody on the same playing field, but not really. Because if you don't know how to access, crunch, and deal with the data, you're no better off than you were in the traditional world. But if you have a tool like this that allows you to not only protect yourself, but not only on top of that, to protect yourself, to make sure that no one else gains access to your assets, but at the same time allows you to crunch everyone else's data so that you can make better decisions. Imagine that in a future, even things like Amazon. Imagine Amazon was all done on crypto payments. Amazon uses algorithms to price goods based on the amount of goods that are sold, who's looking at the page, et cetera. What if you had access to the data Amazon has access to, and you could read it in a simple way, meaning that you knew when one product was getting purchased more of the time? So you knew that a pair of shoes you wanted to buy generally gets purchased, I don't know, 50% more on the third Saturday of every month. And then you'd be able to purchase it for cheaper because you have the data. So it's a way to take all this crazy data that we're compiling. And that's an example, obviously, from e-commerce, but you can take that example into anything, including trading. It gives everyone the access and the right to the data that big entities, companies, financial institutions have had forever. And that really is something that levels the playing field. So that was kind of the big eye-opener for me, is the fact that it's taking data that everybody thinks, oh, it's blockchain, it's transparent. But it's meaningless unless you have a way to actually visualize that data and use it.
That's really fascinating. So Parsec is just emerging into the world recently. They're doing an IEO on the CoinMetro platform. So can you tell us what is the difference between an IEO and an ICO for people that might not be familiar?
Sure. I guess I'll take it from two angles. One, in reality, there's really no difference in terms of, now don't take that in a negative context, because obviously ICO's got a lot of negative publicity. In reality, what an ICO truly is a company that creates an asset and offers it up for sale in basically what would be considered a primary market. So the people who are buying those tokens are the first buyers of those tokens. They're buying them direct from the issuer. So the IEO doesn't necessarily change anything on that. What it does add is it adds a couple layers of security and complexity that make it a bit more, let's say, streamlined for the investor. One, the IEOs are conducted through an exchange. And depending on the regulation of that exchange, where they're based, and I guess their business model, they're doing some type of due diligence. And that doesn't mean you can trust every exchange's due diligence, but what it means is there's a filter in place. There's a filter in place that someone's actually looking at this project and making sure that, you know, it checks some boxes according to their own requirements. Two, it's a more of a streamlined way to offer an ICO because most exchanges have multiple ways to make payments, multiple ways to make deposits, et cetera. So it's making it a bit easier. It's giving a bit more access. For the issuer, it's giving them access to obviously the exchange's own client base. So they're not only just trying to pull clients maybe through some arbitrary website. And in our case, what we do on our side to kind of separate, because for me, one of the biggest reasons ICOs got a bad rap is basically because there was no real way to protect clients if the underlying, you know, project just failed. And I don't mean failed. Look, businesses fail. In fact, most businesses fail. You know, that's just the reality of our world, outside of crypto included, right? The majority of people that try to start a business, well, they don't succeed. So now with ICOs, what happened was people basically gave up their hard-earned money and then found out that most of their investments failed. So what we did was we added a little layer in there. We kind of took the, I guess, something from what was called a DICO. So basically what a DICO was, something built on Ethereum that basically allowed, through a smart contract, the automatic distribution of ICO profits by way of hitting milestones. So when the company hit a certain milestone, they got more money. If they didn't hit the milestone, they didn't get any more money. We adopted that. And basically, you know, Parsec basically set a set of milestones, and we act as an escrow agent. So basically, the exchange, CoinMetro, holds the funds. A certain amount of funds are released immediately after the sale ends. And then depending on the amount raised and depending on those roadmaps, the funds are then released when the company actually completes the milestone. If it doesn't complete the milestone, then the token holders are allowed to vote whether they think the project should continue. And if they vote that it shouldn't continue, and obviously there are thresholds that need to be met, but if that threshold is met by the votes, then all the rest of the money is returned back to those token holders, which means that they know that their maximum risk is 50% maximum going in, meaning they could lose 50% of their investment. But if the business turns out to be a complete scam where they don't do anything, they follow none of their roadmap, no code is written, et cetera, that they're protected in some way. So that's not every IEO. That's, I think, unique to CoinMetro. But the real thing here is that we've moved from every issuer having their own website to issuers now going onto exchanges, much more similar to what an IPO is in let's say, traditional markets, to what this initial kind of fundraising craze was, where, yeah, you create a website, you fundraise from that website.
That's really fascinating. So this is kind of like ICO 2.0, but now there are some investor protections, some sort of extra accountability for the company raising the funds, and definitely a lot more confidence. Like, I had no idea that CoinMetro even served as an escrow agent. That's really, really interesting. So what benefit is it to CoinMetro to actually go through all this trouble?
Well, I think that one, we have a vision that things need to be done in a regulated manner. That doesn't necessarily mean that we, you know, when I say I'm pro-regulation, that doesn't mean I like all regulation. Doesn't even mean I like any regulation. It means that I think from just working in financial markets for years, you know, when there are no rules, even really good people do bad things. It's just the way, you know, greed, whatever the reason is. Markets need to have rules. And maybe we have too many rules, but we definitely need some type of rules. So we tried to sit down and think from a perspective, one, of the contributor side, people that are putting money into these projects. And then two, from the project side, because obviously you don't want to make a system that is detrimental to the project, meaning that they could have a small failure and then lose all their money, because that doesn't work either. It doesn't work for the contributor either, because what happens if the company's 90% through their goals and then they miss one small piece of a milestone and then the other 10% is refunded, now they don't have money to continue. So it was about finding the sweet spot where we could add some consumer protection into that model and at the same time be able to make sure that companies were held accountable. And why? Well, it behooves everyone to make sure that the market operates in a streamlined and let's say a way that rules are followed. Without any rules, we have, you know, wash trading, fake volumes. We have people being able to come in and manipulate markets, other IEO platforms that basically vest tokens for their contributors and then use market making tactics that would probably be illegal in the traditional world to pump prices up. And as soon as the vesting is over, guess what? Market makers are pulled out and prices fall. And these type of things don't, while I guess they make some money for some individuals, they definitely don't create a real market. They don't create a market that's sustainable. That type of market that's built on greed and mistrust is not going to be able to be around. It's not going to sustain itself over the next coming years. And I'm in this market not for a few years. I want to be here, you know, until I don't know. I'm senile and so gray haired that I can't even look at a market. So I want to make sure that it's around. I want to make sure it lasts. And to do that, we need rules.
I think we appreciate that too. I mean, there's not a lot of cats like you out there that are fighting the long-term fight. So,
yeah, it's not easy, but like the saying goes, right? Somebody has to do it. Unfortunately, it's not just me, right? There's a lot of companies now that are starting to turn over a new leaf, so to speak, and looking to do things the right way. But it just makes sense for everybody. Even the guys that are doing the wrong thing right now eventually will have no business. So they may profit now, but eventually they won't be able to profit anymore. So it's even in their best interest to make sure that the market functions in a more, let's say streamlined or wire fenced manner where there are some rules.
So it kind of, what you're describing, I think for the listeners who are maybe familiar with the term underwriter, it kind of sounds like the IEO model is whereby an exchange is the underwriter of a project. Whereas in the traditional world, you'll have like an investment bank like Goldman Sachs underwrite an IPO. So do you kind of see a future where because the New York Stock Exchange would never underwrite an IPO. It just wouldn't happen. And so now we have exchanges that do underwrite IEOs. So is that like a trend that's shifting, or is that the correct analogy?
I would, just so the people who don't know, so what underwriting normally is in traditional markets is you have an investment bank, or sometimes a group of banks, or sometimes there's a lead bank, and sometimes they're not even banks. You can actually have an underwriting situation that's not banks. That doesn't happen too often, but it used to. But what underwriting is usually they will buy into a stock during its IPO pre-IPO, and they will place a floor. And when price gets to that floor, they have a obligation to buy. And so underwriting helps protect the underwriter, for one, because they bought in pre-IPO and got a good deal. But it also helps protect the original shareholders from having some, crazy guy come online and dump all over them during the IPO or right after. So it maintains price. So it's market making with a twist, right? So it provides a floor. I think for most IEOs, I guess there definitely is what would be equivalent to some underwriting, though it's done for a bit more nefarious reason for the most part. I think that one thing that we definitely lack in this market is underwriting. And eventually, as we mature, I think we get there. But you're probably right that underwriting probably will maybe not never happen, but at least in the short term, midterm here, where we're not going to see investment banks come in and underwrite IEOs. Just the same way that we wouldn't have saw, the New York Stock Exchange underwrite an IPO. I think that the shift now is because most of the money in crypto, if you think about it, doesn't sit with banks, it sits with exchanges. So it makes perfect sense that in an IEO situation, it's the exchange that would do the underwriting. And while we don't have true underwriting yet, I think we will get there. And I think it probably will be exchanges that provide that underwriting service, because in a traditional world, all the money sits with the banks. And then the banks use that money to make profits and then pay the smallest amount of that profit they possibly can back to their guys with savings in the bank, right? They pay, 1% and make 400. That's how the banking system works. In terms of crypto, no banks hold a lot of, very little banks have any crypto on their books whatsoever. So the money sits with exchanges. They're the ones that hold the cash. They're the ones that have the ability then to use that cash, those assets, to underwrite. So I think we're not there yet. We definitely need to see underwriting to get a more mature market, that's for sure. I think market making has matured a bit. We'll probably get to a point where we start to see that, maybe in the short term. But it also depends on where we go from here, because we went from ICO to IEO. We may go, I don't know if we're going to go to, EIEIO next or what's going to happen. But we'll probably end up with some other hybrid of what we currently have now. But underwriting is a key missing aspect. It's part of market infrastructure. And unfortunately, most people don't focus on infrastructure. They focus on front end. But eventually, we're going to need it. That's for
sure. Absolutely. And there's also an interesting facet of the crypto exchanges when compared to the traditional exchanges is insofar as, you know, CoinMetro has the XCM token, and the XCM token holders actually benefit from IEOs being hosted on the CoinMetro platform. Is that correct? Could you walk us through that?
Sure. So I guess it's and you're right. In a traditional sense, the only way you really benefit, if you own, you know, Apple stock on the NASDAQ and NASDAQ does an IPO, your Apple stock doesn't automatically go up. And that's mainly because, well, they're uncorrelated assets, right? They have nothing to do with one another. Now, when you talk about exchanges like CoinMetro that have their own token, that token, in our case, is directly linked to the amount of volume that happens on the exchange because our fees are converted into our own token. So the more fees that get collected, the more tokens that are purchased at market price, the more tokens purchased at market price pushes demand pushes price. So yes, the more eyes on the exchange, the more people that come and trade on the exchange, whether that's to get into a new IEO offering, whether that's just because they show up at the exchange for whatever reason, but definitely IEOs have the propensity to push massive amounts of users onto the exchange, which means a massive push in volume, which means massive demand increase for the underlying token. So yes, and that's definitely a unique aspect. It's kind of like without breaking regulatory rules, an exchange token, if done correctly, is basically like buying into a revenue share of the underlying exchange. Because as if there's correlation between the revenue and the token price, which not every exchange token has, but definitely some do, like XCM at CoinMetro, that means that as the exchange does better, then obviously you're pushing demand. So yeah, definitely something. It's a way, I guess, of it's a way to provide liquidity, one, back to the business, and on the other side, it's a way to provide some incentive for people to buy into the token, and it's a way to thank people that bought into the token that are sitting on it. Because, well, over time, it increases in value.
It's really cool having Parsec and CoinMetro both just kind of addressing a problem that they see in the industry and really dragging the rest of the industry forward with them by doing things the right way and providing a value that no one else is really even trying to do yet. So that's really awesome. Having you guys on the show just warms my heart, melts my cheese. It's really exciting just to see that you guys are working together to make the crypto space better. So what kind of traction does Parsec have so far? Are there any other projects or partners that you guys have aside from CoinMetro?
Yes, there are very interesting ongoing integrations. So one of the interesting use cases and guys from the BC Vault, it is hardware wallet. They came to us and proposed to integrate with them in a very interesting manner. So it is known that the hardware wallet could be used for signing messages. And we could provide for hardware wallet such a functionality when user logins to our system, not through email login and password, but through through signing of the message with his hardware wallet, and we immediately create a solution for monitoring of his addresses. So we don't know anything about the user, but we could monitor his addresses and send notifications to his Telegram. And even we do not store his Telegram account, we store only the Telegram token that exposes nothing to anyone who is the user, because this Telegram access token that gives us ability to propagate messages to user. So for the external users, it looks like user plugins the hardware wallet, opens the Parsec, links the Telegram, then plugs out the hardware wallet, and he will receive all the activity that happens with his addresses to his Telegram without any exposing information of who is he, why is he's using this. It's a kind of very interesting feature for those who are concerned in privacy. Another clients are, for example, we recently were announced the partnership with Algorand. So we have a new blockchains that want to be integrated to Parsec, so we could scale horizontally by integrating as many different blockchains to be able to monitor and to provide programmers more easy way how to build products on top of those blockchains. And as well, different custody funds, they are also approaching to us exactly for the functionality of real-time monitoring of their addresses and early alerts about any illicit activity that could be detected early with our notification system.
Were you able to assist Algorand with the hack that just happened?
No, unfortunately, if, for example, if our technology, Parsec Protect, that we plan to implement would be integrated, then maybe this hack could be prevented. But of course, these hacks, for example, when you are analyzing the mempool, you have several seconds to react. For the humans, this, for example, 2 or 5 seconds is not sufficient to react properly. But for automated systems that protect custody funds, it is sufficient to react and to create, for example, front running transaction to save these funds.
That's fascinating. So, at a high level, any blockchain that is Parsec enabled can immediately and automatically freeze a bad transaction if it's detected to be fraudulent, for example.
I would say that if the blockchain itself is fast enough and the finality there is very fast, then unfortunately we cannot prevent this fraud, because for example, if the finality of the transaction is reached within, for example, fraction of the second, then there is no place to react. But in this case, we could trace what will happen with these funds. And if these funds will reach some exchange, we could immediately notify all the exchanges that these funds are stolen. If attackers will not use mixers and other things that prevents us from analyzing money flows, then we could immediately freeze these stolen funds in other exchanges by notifying exchanges that these funds are stolen. And it is interesting that the Chainalysis report that was published recently shows that the criminals do not use mixers. Mixers are used by the normal persons who are concerned in privacy. But criminals, they are trying to immediately send stolen money to another exchange and convert them to other.
Why don't criminals use mixers? And also, didn't the whole BTCE thing, wasn't that a whole big mixing scam that the FBI shut down? I think criminals definitely do use mixers.
They are using, but the Chainalysis report shows that the average case for the criminals is not using.
Because mixing takes too long?
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
I'd venture a guess as well to say that criminals don't trust criminals. So, to be honest, and having said that, I can tell you from our own onboarding, you are able to see sometimes or have a venture a guess using systems like Parsec or other systems on the market to do blockchain analysis when funds may have touched a mixer. And in the vast majority of clients that we see that have touched or seem to have touched a mixer are, yes, usually individuals that have absolutely no reason to use the mixer. And just by using it, simply get flagged on our side, because obviously we don't accept funds that come through mixers. For various reasons. So I think Anatoly, and I read the same report, and I think it's probably right. Most criminals aren't that smart. So there are smart criminals, but if they're a smart criminal, you're never really labeled a criminal because you're smart enough not to be. And, you know, most criminals are not smart. Most criminals get nervous, and most people that are criminals don't trust other criminals. And a guy running a mixer is probably not the most stand up individual.
Yeah. No. So is CoinJoin a mixer?
The CoinJoin transactions themselves, they are by definition transactions of Bitcoins themselves are mixers because they have many inputs, several inputs and several outputs. And if you create such a transaction, you cannot say which money goes from which input to which output. Only the total amount is controlled, that outputs is not more than inputs.
Yeah, so the whole UTXO set.
But most of the transactions, most of the current transactions, they have a very particular structure that can be easily analyzed. When Bitcoin will implement CoinJoin transactions, when CoinJoin transactions will be the majority of the transactions in Bitcoin network, then... No, I would say that we would apply another way of analyzing how funds are propagated, correlation analysis, amount analysis, and so on. There are a lot of different graph-based algorithms how we can analyze funds. Yes, they are probabilistic, but we will provide not the exact labeling, but probabilistic labeling in this case. This is more than nothing. So to have a probabilistic assessment.
Yeah, it's really cool just seeing the evolution of blockchain analysis, security, and investor protections. And the fact that they're all coming from one direction makes it a lot easier to digest, I would say. So before we let you guys go, there's a couple questions we like to ask all of our guests that come on the show. So Anatoly, who's one person that you admire in the crypto space?
I would say definitely the Gavin Wood, who created Ethereum and Polkadot. So Vitalik Buterin is known as a creator of the Ethereum, but the real creator of the Ethereum, proper mathematical abstractions, defining the virtual machine, and now he works on the substrate, Gavin Wood.
Gavin Wood, absolutely. He's done a lot for this space. And Kevin, just to close us out, if this is the first podcast someone heard, what would you want them to know about what's going on?
It's a good question. But I think that people need to realize that this market or crypto in general is much bigger than just, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and you know, crypto kitties. And that the information they hear a lot on the news, whether they're watching CNN or CNBC or BBC or wherever they are in the world, they need to understand that we're really at the cusp of a major macroeconomic change, not only how capital markets function, but how just general finance and general movement of money and really the kind of disintermediation between governments, between financial institutions, between everything's going to become more and more decentralized over time. You know, blockchain, people need to understand that blockchain is a protocol like the internet was a protocol. And the first apps on the internet, whether you were on, I don't know, AOL chat rooms, or whether you were doing something, I don't know, maybe the first guys to use email. These were the first apps that gave usage to the underlying protocol, which was the internet. And no one envisioned, maybe very few people envisioned what the internet would lead to. Even we're talking only 25 years ago. We're not talking about, you know, a long, long time ago. And now we're on this cusp of now changing basically the way just value is moved around the world. And it should be as exciting. If you can think about if you were alive 25 years ago, how much knowledge you have now about what the internet is and how many great investment decisions and just great decisions overall you could have made if you had this knowledge. Think about 25 years from now, or even less than that, to be honest, because the technology is moving much faster than it was 25 years ago. Imagine the knowledge that you could apply now, knowing what will probably happen. We're talking about just changing the way a lot of things in our life function. So blockchain being a protocol, the first apps have all been financial, Bitcoin, Ethereum, et cetera, smart contracts. Most are geared toward the financial markets. But this blockchain will invade all types of areas of your life, just like the internet did. So, you know, I think people just need to be aware. They should drown out the noise when it comes to people talking about Bitcoin price and, oh my God, Bitcoin's below 8K again. Oh, Bitcoin's back to 10. All that stuff is relatively meaningless in the grand scope of things, understanding that we're at the verge of changing a very important piece of our human lives, and that's transfer of value. We changed transfer of data with the internet. Now we're moving on to value, which obviously you can say is probably more valuable, pun intended there, but you can now move valuable data, but you can also move actual value. And it's a game changer. And anybody listening to this is literally on the ground floor. So they really should, you really should start to do some research and get involved any way you can. Doesn't mean investing in a company per se. It could mean that. It could mean just getting involved, understanding, making sure your kids learn blockchain. If your kid is 5 now, make sure they start studying blockchain when they get older, because it's going to be what underpins most of every industry moving forward over the next 20, 30 years.
Hell yeah. Good word, brother. That's awesome. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today, for taking the time. And again, we'll have you guys back soon. We very much enjoyed it.
So for our listeners out there, if you want to check out more information, go to parsic.io. That's parsiq.io. And if you want to check out their IEO sale right now of their PRQ tokens on CoinMetro, you can simply go to coinmetro.com. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We look forward to talking to you guys next time.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.